Hello, everybody, and welcome. I'm very glad to have you all join me here in this introduction to esoteric astrology. I'd like to handle this webinar a little bit differently than I have handled the Seven Ray webinars. I'd like this to be much more interactive. So rather than saving questions, I'm going to be asking you questions and then offering also opportunities to ask questions. So we really need to see your hands come up on this webinar. When I've taught this, it's always been in classroom situations, and interactive and getting responses from you really helps an awful lot. So I'm inviting that. Okay, you will find probably a lot of this is redundant, especially early on in the beginning. You may have already learned this in the past or studied this in the Maurya Federation. But in any event, I thought we should start right from the beginning so that everyone gets the same information. And for those that don't know any astrology, it really is very good for building the foundation. And we will be having several webinars. There's no way I can teach all of this in an hour and a half. It's usually a two-day workshop, so you know the basics will require several of these. So I hope you can attend. So let's begin with the first question that you see on the screen. What is esoteric astrology? And the first question, of course, I ask beginners would be, what is esoteric? I don't need to do that with you. You guys know what esoteric is. But esoteric astrology, what it does is it places the man and classical, which is another way of saying traditional astrology, in a wider context. And of course, for those that had not been exposed to this in the past, all this information we know comes from the Tibetan. I'm going to move this over a little bit more so I can still see my control panel. There we go. So regular astrology or classical or traditional astrology concerns itself with matter and form. Basically, it's the personality. It's the field of expression of the personality. So one's everyday life and one situation. So it's not just matter. It's the whole physical form expression of that. Whereas esoteric astrology concerns us with the deeper side of life, with the soul and its development. So esoteric astrology deals with causes rather than just the effects. The soul is the cause, and that, you know, lies behind the outer form, which is the body, which is then the effect. So cause and effect. The cause is the soul, the effect is what ends up happening to the individual. Esoteric astrology deals with the consciousness aspect that you already know, which is soul, and it is the part of us that's evolving, that is aware. So what is the purpose of all of this is to integrate the soul into the personality so that one can carry out one's purpose. This is what we refer to soul infusion, infusing more of the personality into the soul. Good question. Why are we here? Well, I could ask you that, but I think you all know that. So I don't want to hold up other parts that I would want to ask you. We're all here to learn, to evolve, to grow, to expand, to be the best that we can be, to fulfill our purpose, right? Now, when you die, what do you take with you? All the treasures that you've garnered from this incarnation. What are those treasures? Their consciousness, the expansion of consciousness. So that's the only thing you take with you. No physical form, matter kind of treasures. It's the treasures that are housed within the causal body. So any work that you can do on expanding yourself is something that you will take with you. So it's never, never a waste to learn, to expand, to grow, to know more. And when we say that life is a continuum, There is a one philosophy of astrology, although it's rebunked by some. I do believe the Tibetan has said it somewhere, that the life, or rather the sign that you die in, is the same sign that in the next incarnation you are born into. So if that is the case, and if there is some truth to that, we can see the continuum of life, right? You pick up, really, where you left off. Now, many advanced souls do not respond well to classical or exoteric or personality astrology readings. They end up not giving them meaning. Meaning, as you know, is a soul word. I know that when there is a soul emergence, when someone has a crisis and a soul that's trying to speak to them, traditional astrology doesn't address that, and it doesn't then bode well for the person having a reading. It says here we always have a choice, so we can be conscious co-creators of our destiny. We know about choice, don't we? We can choose to be conscious. We can choose the soul way. We can choose the personality way. We can be pulled to one side. We can be pulled to the other side. But we always have a choice. And that is the difference between the exoteric rulers and the esoteric rulers. So that's your basic intro into what we're going to get into now. Here's the zodiac. The zodiac is a Greek word which means circle of animals. And it circumscribes our solar system. These are all constellations. What is a constellation? This is what I have to ask you. So anyone that has an answer to that, please put up your hand. What is a constellation? I'm happy to unmute you all, but if we start having interference with computers, then I'm going to have to definitely work only with hands up. So let me see what I can do by unmuting you guys.
Ray and Walter have their hands up.
Okay. All right. Where are they? Ray, up at the top. That's what you told me. Very good. Okay. No, that's not how I do it. Okay. Let me just be patient with me. Ray,
see
hi.
Your hands up.
Ray? Hello, Ray?
Hello, Eva. Can you hear me?
Yes, hi. Welcome.
Hiya. Thank you. You want to know you're asking what a constellation is.
Then what's a constellation? Very simple.
Right. A constellation is just a group of stars. The sun or the ecliptic runs through, if you like, as the backdrop.
So say it again. What is a constellation? A constellation is?
Constellation is a group of stars.
Yes.
Simply.
It's simply put. And it's two or more is what is
really.
Two or more are what a constellation is. And a star is the same thing as our sun. Very good. So, okay. All right. Now, do I have to? I'm going to try.
Can I ask you something which is related to that?
Sure, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Are you going to address the sidereal zodiac as against the tropical?
No.
Or can you do that?
Maybe in the next time around, I will get more information on that. I don't play around with the sidereal. I know the sidereal is more the exact placement of where things are, whereas the one we work with is not. But I don't know what too much to say to that, but I can get the information and I can bring it forth next time around. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Eva, okay. I can address it.
Please do.
Okay. Basically, you gave the quick down dirty of what it is. The sidereal is the actual position of the stars in the sky without regard to where the Earth is. And the tropical is the one that we, from the Earth, perceive it to be. And they actually move slightly. I think it's like 1 degree every 74 years or something to that nature. But basically, from the Earth, we think of the Aries entering into the Sun, entering into Aries at that particular time in April, and the Sun moving into Libra from our perspective at that particular time in the fall. And so we adjust the tropical zodiac to follow that that particular pattern. But in reality, what's happening is the Earth wobbles in its revolution around the Sun, and the Sun itself wobbles in its revolution around the greater, the central Sun that it goes in. And so the position actually changes slightly. And that's where we get the difference in the ages. It's
the difference in the ages.
30 degree whack apart when we're entering the age of Aries. I'm sorry, the age of Aquarius. And when we enter the age of Capricorn, it'll be approximately 60 degrees apart, and so on as we go through that greater zodiac that takes 25,000 years for our Sun to traverse around. And that's what, so that each age is the little bitty part of that, which is approximately 2,200 years. And that's what's happening when the sidereal, I don't know, am I making this worse? That's what the difference is between the sidereal and the tropical. We still, from our perspective here on Earth, just as we think that the Sun is moving around the constellations, when in reality it's the Earth moving around those constellations at the opposite point, we still think that in April, when the... we have that exact the equinox. I'm sorry, the equinox there. When we have that equinox, we still think of that as being zero Aries, and that's the tropical zodiac. I'm sorry.
In a nutshell,
crystal clear as mud.
Yeah, so, in a nutshell, BL, just for those who are hearing this for the very first time. Without going into the fuller explanation, the sidereal versus the zodiac. Sidereal is?
The real, actual position of the stars in the sky without respect to where the Earth is.
Right. And the zodiac is the one that we all follow when we do our charts.
They're both the zodiac. One is the sidereal zodiac. The other is the tropical zodiac. It's the tropical one, and that's the one that we look at from the Earth's perspective, where the equinoxes are, where the solstices are, so that we artificially say they're always at zero Aries, zero Cancer, zero Libra, and zero Capricorn. Okay? It's an artificial... way that we look at it from the Earth's perspective, but as DK tells us several times in esoteric astrology, well, and in the other books too, it's a thought form that has been built up over all of these eons, and it's a very powerful thought form, and that is why the tropical zodiac works.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Moving along. Okay, so esoteric astrology makes us aware that the whole field of space is an expression of one life, a life of which we are all a part. Everything is related, and everything in our solar system, as we know, is held together, influenced by the Sun, the solar logos of our system. All these planets are, in fact, it's chakras. What is a natal chart or a horoscope? Horo being of the hour and scope is to view. So a natal chart is really a blueprint or a snapshot. We say that it's the footprint of the soul incarnating. Soul makes decisions before we are born. The exact time of birth is a decision that is made by the soul. It's not willy-nilly that one is born at a particular time. And that's why if any of you have had charts done, the astrologer, an esoteric astrologer, really tries to get to the exact time of where you were when you were born. Because in esoteric astrology, that is what is the most important thing. And we'll get to that in a minute. What we as souls choose, such as family, time and place of birth, the challenges, the abilities and the powers, is chosen by the soul. It's not our personality wishes that we, oh, well, I'd like to be born in Canada versus Bangladesh, or I'd like to have these this particular family. It's not a personality choice. And also there are treasures that we are born with, as you know. Those are your abilities. Those are your talents and what you've amassed over several incarnations. And then you're born with what it is that you need to cultivate. And the chart allows you to see what are my strengths and what is it that I need to work on and cultivate. There are three luminaries that we focus on: the sun, the ascendant, and the moon. The sun represents the personality in the chart. The Tibetan tells us it is the problem in life. And that's my question to you. Why is the sun the problem in life? So we can see a hands up on that one. Why is the sun a problem? Okay, Yvonne, I see your hand. In a minute here. There we go. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi. The sun is our personality. Is that why?
The sun is our personality. Why is this the problem in the life?
Because we have to become more soul infused and overcome all the personality traits or character defects that we have.
Right. Isn't that as simple as that? The personality keeps us quite stuck in personality life. And so therefore, depending on how much we are identified with personality, and let's face it, most of us are, it becomes the problem in the life. I remember the first time I read that in esoteric astrology, it really stopped me dead in my tracks. I had to think about it and think that Tibetan tells us that it's the problem in the life. And it's a simple little response to that. So thank you, Yvonne.
You're welcome.
Eventually, however, we need to shine like the sun in the sky to be the best that we can be. So the personality is very needed. No different than what we discussed when we talked about the rays. Personality is needed. And one needs to know the characteristics, the virtues, the negative qualities of the personality. The personality or the sun sign sets the pace or the established tempo of the personality life. And it is related to the quality, the temperament, and the life tendencies which are seeking expression during this particular incarnation. Now, the sun sign usually in each incarnation will be different, therefore a completely new set of planetary influences. For the benefit of all the students, I have actually put a lot of information onto slides so that later on, when this is a recording, it's available and one can refer to this instead of just the pretty pictures that I like to have. So there's actual information on a lot of these slides. The rising sign is also known as the ascendant. It is the sign that rises on the horizon at the time that we are born. And since there are 12 signs, 24 hours, it changes every 2 hours. The rising sign, very important. It indicates the intended life or immediate soul purpose. Many people think that the ascendant or the rising sign is the soul, and I will beg to differ. It is the way by which one carries out the soul purpose. Okay, so that particular sign helps one know the qualities to aim for, the qualities to cultivate, and if we learn the keynote associated with the ascendant, it really helps a lot. I encourage every one of you to meditate on that particular keynote that is associated with your rising sign, and what does it mean to you? Try to come to terms with what is it really telling me? And how can I be more of that? What do I need to do in order to be more that way? So it is a clue to the life achievement, and it holds the secret of the future. So the ascendant is the future, the sun sign is the present, and it's the highest quality that the soul can potentially unfold in any lifetime. That's why it's so important. And of course, if you know the exact time, then we get the exact degree, and that helps us with transits. It helps us with configurations within the chart that we call aspects. So the exact degree is very important if you start to really work with astrology. Now, anytime you have a question, just raise your hand, please, as we go along. Now the rising.
And this is BL.
Yes, BL.
I just wanted to also mention that not only is it important to know the exact time for the things that you just mentioned, but that the rising sign then sets everything else in your chart. It determines, of course, where the midheaven is and all of the other houses, no matter which of the various house systems you use. It basically sets the mandala for the whole chart, not just the ascendant, by knowing that accurate birth time.
Right. Thank you. Right. So the rising sign, as has been said, is determined by the exact time of birth. Hence the first breath, representing the incarnation of the soul. The eternal soul comes before the personality. Therefore, rising sign comes first. There are many esoteric astrologers who will, the first thing they will do is look at the rising sign. That is the most important luminary, the most important area in the entire chart. So what is one's destiny? It is the rising sign plus the esoteric or soul ruling planets. It represents the harmony aspect of life and can produce right relationship between soul and personality in any one incarnation. That's the rising sign. You can do that. Hence again, we see that it is not the soul. It is the means by which the soul will work out its purpose in any given incarnation. Okay? Again, if you have any questions as we go along, please feel free to ask. Now we move on to the moon. The moon, as many of you know by now, is a dead body. It's not a living entity anymore. At one time it was. Now it only reflects the light of the sun. So the moon is of the past, and it represents our limitations and the present handicaps that we have. This is stuff that we bring with us from previous incarnations. It is of the past. So it's the abilities that we have learned from before. It tends to govern the physical body or the form. The moon is also known as the mother of form, and shows where the prison of the soul is to be found. Again, any comments on the prison of the soul? Remember, the personality was the problem in the life, but the moon is the prison of the soul. I would like to hear comments as to why is the moon the prison of the soul? Okay, so I see Victor up here. Hi, Victor.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I've got a question. What do you mean the prison of the soul? That's where the prison of the soul is found.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
That's what I'm asking.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
Okay.
Is that where the soul is?
Let's,
in prison?
Let's have more comments on that, and let's see if we can arrive at what that means. It's the prison of the soul. Okay, I'm going to ask Walter. Hi, Walter.
Hello. So, yes, the physical body in general could be considered as a prison of the soul as it's developing. And since the moon is associated with the physical body, it seems like the moon would be related to the prison of the soul.
Now, why would the physical body be a prison?
Well, just it has denser vibrations, and it's what is the soul is developing through, and so the consciousness is more limited in the three worlds and needs to be developed. So there's kind of a disconnection, just as like a prison disconnects you from the greater world around you.
Right. It creates limitation. Remember the word up a little bit above there? It's limitation. Well, what does the prison do? It holds us and it limits us so that we cannot move forward. We are held in captivity, literally in captivity. So thank you for that, Walter. You're dead on. Now, Yvonne. Go ahead, Yvonne.
The prison of the soul, the moon is our last incarnation, and the moon brings with it all the tendencies that we have from our last incarnation that we didn't overcome. I'm talking about bad tendencies, things that we have to work on. Maybe good too, I don't know, but they bring tendencies from the past, our talents, our handicaps. That's the way I understood it.
Well, it's everything that we have already accumulated and known in the past. It doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good. In other words, what we bring with us from the past is something that we already know because we've been there before. We've done that before. Now, if we energize, and if you look at the very last line I have on this screen, it says it doesn't need to be energized. If we energize what we already know, then we can't move forward. We already keep replaying what we already know. We keep expanding what we know, and there's no point in doing that, right? It doesn't create an opportunity and a challenge to move forward. It keeps us entrenched in the knowledge and in the abilities that we already know how to do or know and understand. So it's not something that needs to be energized. So the physical form is one part of the moon, and then there's another component to the moon, and that is our emotions, our feelings. And if we feel good, we feel secure. You know, emotions and feelings and security all tend to go together. So when we look at the moon in our chart, it speaks to all these things. It speaks to the physical form. It speaks to our emotions and our feelings and how secure we feel or don't feel. And it is a very interesting thing that some exoteric astrologers who are more into psychology have come away with. They say that the way to know what kind of a gift to give someone is to know what their moon is. Because if you know what the moon is it a water sign, is it an earth, and so on, and you buy a gift that is in co-measurement to that element or to what that moon can represent, then that person likes the gift and feels very secure with that gift. So there's something to be said about understanding and knowing those qualities of the moon. And we'll talk about that as we move along. Now, the other thing, so there's three major things we want us to know. It is the lower form, it is our emotions and feelings and security, and the last thing I want you all to know is that it is our unconscious tendencies. It is the habits of the past, the things that we do without thought. It is, in fact, our lines of least resistance. So when we find ourselves in any given situation where we don't have time to think, we tend to rely on our moon abilities. on the moon. It's done unconsciously. We don't think about it. It is there under the surface all the time. Unconscious tendencies. And so if once you know what your moon is, watch yourself. See how many times you slip back into moon forms. Okay? Okay, energy. Now, this was all discussed with all of you during the 7-Ray workshop. Energy is not good and it's not bad. How we appropriate the...
Annabelle has her hand up.
Okay, I'll be with her in a sec. Okay. How we appropriate the energies has to do with a point of evolution. And that's why sometimes these energies that we appropriate are called strengths and sometimes they are weaknesses. Energy simply is. There is no sign that is better than another sign. There is no planet that is better than another planet. Well, we have all kinds of words that we use that might indicate that one is better than another. But in fact, all gives off energy. All is energy, and energy simply is. Okay, Annabelle, I'm going to go to you. Hang in there till I unmute you. Hi, Annabelle.
Hi, Eva. Thank you for this webinar. I just wanted to say something back to you to see if I got it right. So applying astrology to try to figure out what my path in learning is, I would look then, for example, at where my moon is and then versus my rising sign and look at the traits of those two things to find out what my conflicts are. It would help me understand my conflicts better in trying to overcome them, right?
Well, we want to include all three luminaries. The moon is the past, the personality is the present, and the rising sign is the future. It's what you're moving toward. Okay?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so it's to try to understand the descriptors that we give to those particular signs. What are the qualities of the moon? And there's always a big list of them. What are the qualities of my sun sign? And there's always a big list to them, and so on. And then you start looking at, now, which ones do I carry out? Which ones do I find myself doing or behaving? Because let's face it, no one person does everything that's on that list. We all appropriate energies differently and in a particular way. So do I slip into moon qualities easily without knowing that I do? And if I do, when do I do that? How can I be more conscious so that I don't slip back into moon qualities? Now, then you look at your personality, and you have to have a pretty good idea of what your personality characteristics are. And do I portray them? Do I, in fact, act that way? Right?
Okay.
And then you work with the rising sign, and you work with some of the upper, higher, better, more evolved qualities of that particular rising sign. You're not going to work with the negative ones.
So is the sun sign, then, is that like the tool or the mediator between the moon and the rising to help you?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a mediator. It is what it is. It's your personality. It's your identity. It's how you and others.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. The next three slides are just points of interest, and every time I show them, people go, "Oh, interesting." So that's what it is. There's nothing to learn here. Now, this just shows you, it shows you the sizes. Now look at Pluto. It's the smallest, but it's deadly. You know, when you're getting a Pluto transit, it's a hard one to live. So look at that, and look at the difference between Mars and the Earth. And it is said that Venus is our sister planet that is far more evolved than we are. It progressed while we had a little bit of a handicap. And we're kind of similar in size. Interesting. The next one. Okay, so we go look where the Earth is in comparison to Uranus and Neptune. and look at Jupiter, Jupiter being the largest planet in our solar system. And Saturn is not that far off it. And look at the color of Neptune. It's that beautiful blue that I associate very much with the second ray. Sometimes blue is also associated with the sixth ray, and it's got sort of a combination of both, because it is both two and six as far as its rays are concerned. Look at the size of Pluto in comparison. Beautiful, isn't it, to see all of that? Okay, any questions? Go right ahead now while I pull up the next slide series that I want to go through with you.
Have you got the password?
No, okay, everybody. Now we're going to move along. And
is it calculate 259?
Okay, it's just some slides to show you our solar system. You see that there is this, you can see my cursor as I move it along, right? This is a band that sort of separates the personal planets that are rotating around the sun from the, well, we could say transpersonal, although the Jupiter and Saturn are really not quite transpersonal. They're sort of in the middle, and then those other ones are further out, and they are considered the transpersonal out here. And it's very interesting to see the ecliptic, or the ecliptic would go horizontal, and this is the band, or rather the path that these signs carry out. Now, while I'm looking at these pictures, can anyone tell me the difference between a constellation and a sign? And is there a difference? What is a constellation and what is a sign? Got to be some thought on this. Okay, Ray, unmute you.
Oh, the stars in the sky.
I'm sorry, Ray, I hadn't unmuted you when you started to speak, so could you start at the beginning again?
Okay, a constellation is the actual stars in the sky as you see them.
Right.
And the signs are the same planet, the same stars, but as they were, what was it, about nearly 2,000 years ago. At one time they were both merged and in the same positions, but since that point in time the signs have moved on and the constellations are still as they are in the sky.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Mm-hmm. There are other thoughts on that too. I'd like to hear from other people as well. I'm going to mute you again, although right now there's not interference. Other thoughts? Okay, Luca. Just a minute, Luca. Hi, Luca.
Hi. Hello. Nice to be here. Well, I think the constellations are only an illusory waymarks where we have pictured in our minds where some kind of forces are coming from, or energies. And these energies are basically that what we call signs. The constellation itself is only that bright stars that are in the direction from where the forces and energies are coming from. They have no factual existence. They are shifting and changing. In, let's say, 10 billion years from now, these constellations as we see them now will be gone, because stars will move and they will be totally different, but the forces, the directions will stay the same. Will be more, not the same, but are more fixed.
Okay, that's similar to what Ray offered as well. Okay, thank you very much, Luca. I'd like to add to that, if there isn't anybody else to comment. Someone's dog is nice and active.
You need to unmute me. I mean, you need to mute me.
Who is me?
That's my dog, Annabelle.
Annabelle, okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know how to mute me.
Okay, if you go right onto the green, what looks like a microphone, and you tap that, it'll give you a choice of mute me, and you can mute yourself.
Okay.
Okay. I can mute you, but it's not that hard. There you go. Beautiful. Okay. So another way to consider the signs is the signs are the emanation or the configuration of all the as has been said, the forces, the energy, the thought forms around the constellations which are in the heaven. So it has taken us thousands of years to arrive at thoughts pertaining to particular constellations. And these thought forms and knowledges that we have accumulated over all these years give us the energy, the forces, as well as the actual energies and forces. So in other words, energy does follow thought, but once the thought form has been created, it becomes a living, I don't want to call it entity, but living energies, because there are so many thoughts connected with these constellations that are now signs. Does that make sense? I hope I haven't said that, whatever the word is. Okay. Planets, you know, the planets in our solar system, just different views of the same thing. Okay, the rays and how they stream through the various planets. So we have, remember, in the center should really not be the Earth, it should really be the Sun, because these constellations circumscribe our solar system. But in any event, this is the best facsimile I could get. So we have the three constellations that we are all familiar with that give us the three aspects of deity. We have the first aspect, or the first ray, coming from the Great Bear, the second coming from Sirius, and the third coming from the Pleiades. That filters down into the zodiac, and from there it goes to the various planets. The sacred planets, Vulcan is associated with first ray, Jupiter with the second ray, Saturn with the third ray, while Mercury is the bridge and is the fourth ray. It's in the middle two. Venus is the fifth ray. Neptune is the sixth ray. And Uranus the seventh ray. And then we have the non-sacred planets, of which the Earth is one. And all we're showing here is the particular ray of the non-sacred planets. We have Pluto, which is first ray. The Sun is second ray. The Earth is third ray. The moon being fourth ray, and Mars being sixth ray. So this is just a flow chart, basically, to show you the downflow of the energies as they move through the constellation and the planets. And here again, I have what we've already seen. The only one that we haven't seen thus far is the Sun in relationship to all the planets. Now, remember how large Jupiter was? Now look at the difference in size between the Sun and even Jupiter and Pluto way down here. Just interesting. Okay, now light. As living entities, the amount
of... Tiago has his hand up.
I'm sorry? Let me hear that again.
Tiago has his hand up.
Okay.
Tiago?
Yes, Tiago. Unmute Tiago. Hi, Tiago.
And Victor.
Oh, I guess Tiago didn't get unmuted. Let me do this again. Tiago, I think you've muted yourself because I can't unmute you any better than I've done. Hi, Tiago. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Eva?
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Very well, thank you. I'm trying to understand everything because everything's so new for me.
I know.
But I'm loving this experience, really loving it.
Okay, good. Do you have a question?
Not yet. I was thinking about the moon, before, and the meaning in my life, because when you told me that the moon is all about the past, I was thinking to myself, how I can bring this in my life, and yeah, this is true. My moon is in Taurus, so everything makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't have any questions.
Okay, so then you would look at the Taurian qualities. What is Taurus all about? We will look at all the signs, we will look at all the planets, and we'll get a much better sense of the various qualities of each sign and the ruling planets. And then you would look as to see how much of that do I actually live? How much of that am I? Okay? That will give you a good sense of truly how much of the moon we live. It is said that children live in their moon. They don't step into their personalities till a lot later. And then, of course, the soul, well, I don't have to tell you, you know, some of us never contact soul and some of us contact soul very early. But children live in their moon, and I have four grandchildren, so I've had lots of opportunity to watch that and to see how, in fact, it actually works out. Well, my grandson, he is 14, and he has a double Leo. And if any of you know anything about Leo, Leo has to do with first ray. It has to do with being in the center, taking being authoritative, taking command. Well, he is just now stepping into, and I kept saying all along to my husband and to my daughter, I don't see the Leo qualities in him, except that he's bossy. I'd like to see him, you know, being much more Leonian in that way. Well, he's part of a group. He is the leader of the group now, with international children that are part of this program. They all look up to him. He's taken on authority roles. And my heart sinks to see these positive qualities coming through him in a Leo way, because he tended to be much more of a follower. I never saw those characteristics before. Well, so if he's 14, he's in his teen years, and he's starting to step into some personality or the sun sign, which is his Leo sun. So I see that. I see how children live in their moon. And we as adults don't really want to live in our moon. However, many of us still do. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, I want to start. Thank you.
Okay, so I have Victor, and you're unmuted. Do you have a question?
Yes.
Go for it.
I'm thinking. I forgot my question. Oh, Veil. A planet that's veiled by another planet. I don't understand that. Are you going to get to that?
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Okay. So hold on, because there's a lot of beginners here, and we want to make sure that not jumping way ahead, okay? Everything in little steps.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm a beginner too.
Thank you for understanding. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about light. As living entities, the amount of light or radiation emitted is usually an indication of how evolved a planet is, or a human being is, or any living organism is. Many advanced souls, as we have said, do not respond well to traditional or exoteric astrology readings. One of the things to know is that we're not fated victims of our horoscope. Even though we've elected to work off karma or learn certain lessons, we always have a choice. I'm repeating something we said right on at the beginning. We always have a choice. So we can become conscious co-workers, co-creators of our destiny. By knowing and understanding the various circumstances, the various intersections of energies, we have a much better idea of how to move through that. So here we are. Constellations are the configurations of suns, groups of stars in the sky that names have been attributed to. Signs are the confluence of concentrated influence. Should I repeat that? Signs are the confluence, the coming together of concentrated influence, collective thoughts, ideas, and influences that man has about these named constellations. Much of this knowledge has been passed down through the ages. And that's basically what we did say. Okay, I'm going to move on. I think this might be a bit of a repeat of what we've talked about before. It is, so I will leave that. In this particular slide, everything is color coordinated here, and there's a reason for it. We will look at this a little later on, but look at all the triangles within the center mandala. You have them very evenly laid out. So here's the red. This is the ascendant, and when BL said that the ascendant really begins the chart, it's the one that creates the configuration or the mandala of the chart. The ascendant is always found in what we call the east, and I know for most people this isn't the east, but in astrology it's considered the east. And it would be a horizontal line here that we would draw across. So on this side we have the ascendant, and on this side we have the descendant. And this horizontal line at this point here is the beginning of the chart. And if we were to start with the beginning of the zodiac, it would be Aries. So Aries would be the very first sign. The second sign would be Taurus. The next one would be Gemini. At this point, you can see that there is what is known as an IC here. And if we were to draw a straight line up, we would have an MC. A median coli, and this is the, it doesn't matter, but know that this is a cross, right? It's a cross, an even armed cross that creates four quadrants in the chart. And these colors are associated with the element that is associated with the chart. So there's three signs that have the same element, and they're in red. There are three signs that have the same element. They are in green. Just, we will go over this again, but I will just mention that the red represents fire, the green represents earth, the yellow in this particular represents the air, and then the purple represents water. So four elements, but there are three signs in each element, and 3 times 4 makes 12. A little math lesson. Okay, also the various parts of the body are ruled by particular signs. It's not important for esoteric astrology to really get into all of this. A lot of classical traditional astrology spends much more time on it than I intend to spend. But we start with the top of the head, and that is ruled by the first sign of the zodiac, which is Aries, and the bottom, which is the feet, and that ends the zodiac, and it's Pisces. So here you have Aries, and that's the end of the zodiac, Pisces, and we go around in this direction. So you have Taurus, which rules the right in here, the neck area. We have Gemini that rules the arms. We have Cancer that rules the digestive area, and so on. It goes all the way, and it goes in a descending way from the top right down to the feet at the bottom. And this is just another picture showing the same thing. Okay. Again, this is not truly esoteric astrology, and it's not something we need to spend a lot of time on, and therefore I don't. And I won't. Okay. But this is an important, now we're starting to move into astrology. Now, I don't want to confuse you with the evolution part of the crosses. This is a lesson that we will go into another time. But all the signs are given a particular cross that they are on. It's also called a mode, the mode. Now, the cardinal crosses consists of Aries. You'll find there are 4 points, and each one of them is a cross. Aries, its opposite being Libra. Then there's Cancer, and its opposite being Capricorn. If there's any homework to be done and anything to be learned in astrology, it is these glyphs. These glyphs are very important because words are not really used a lot for astrologers. It's all glyphs. If you look at a chart, there are no words. It's all glyphs. You have to really start to learn and understand what these glyphs are. So what does cardinal, which is red, really mean? So here are some key words. It means drive or action or beginnings. It's outgoing. It's independent. It seeks control over their environment, those people with a cardinal. They are driven by a sense of purpose. They are movers and shakers. Almost you can see a little bit of third ray here, a little bit of first ray in here, right? If you know your rays. Okay, we'll move down to the next one, which is the fixed cross. Again, you have 4 signs. Opposites are always important to know. So you start with Taurus, which would have been the very next one after Aries. Aries was here, then there's Taurus. Then you move over to its opposite, which is Scorpio. And then Leo, and its opposite, which is Aquarius. And what is the fixed cross all about? Just like the word fixed means, if you didn't look at the words here, what does the word fixed, when something is fixed, it's not movable, is it? It's immovable. So there's something about stability. There's stability. It's something about enduring and steadfast. So if you didn't know all the words here, and you don't have to memorize these words, you would know a lot by understanding what the word fixed means. A lot of other words that we have here, holding, having, but then you have giving as well. Growing, and tends toward caution or to be conservative. That's one thing to keep in mind with fixed crosses. They are conservative. They like to maintain usually the status quo, what they know, what they already have, and predictability as opposed to spontaneity. Okay. So you had cardinal, which was action, it was driven, it was initiating, it was beginnings. You have fixed, which is stable, it's enduring, it's steadfast, it's desires and wants. And then we have mutable, or another word for mutable is common, the common cross. Again, you have your 4 signs. The third sign in the series is Gemini. Its opposite is Sagittarius. Then you would move over to the 6th sign, which is Virgo, and its opposite is Pisces, which is the 12th sign. And what does the word mutable mean? Again, without looking at the words here, the word mutable means it's changeable, it's flexible, it's adaptable. So activity, because of the ability to move around, to change around, it's different kind of activity than forward moving. This one is more malleable, right? It's also doers because they're active. It is spontaneous. It has the ability to adapt. Hence, it adapts to its environment. Also, they can adjust the environment to them. It can be versatile and busy, keeping life interesting. So having done these 3 crosses now, are there any comments or any questions by anybody? This is a good place to take a break here to make sure that you understand when we say that Aries is fire. Well, what is fire? Because automatically we know that Aries is fire. What is fire? Or what is cardinal? See, Aries is cardinal. What is cardinal? Right? No comments? Okay. I guess it's perfectly clear, right? Now we move into the elements that I made reference to, like fire. What do fire signs have in common? And that's a question I'm putting out to you. Then I'm going to ask you what earth signs have in common, what air signs have in common, and what water signs have in common. So whatever you feel comfortable in dealing with, please, you know, put your hand up and we'll look at that. No, I don't want to do that. What happened to the hand that I just saw there? Okay, guys, come on. This is not all that hard. What does fire indicate to you? When you see if something is fiery, what does that mean to you? Okay, Ray.
Fire signs are usually outgoing, and they begin things, start things, get things going, and have the energy to do that.
Right.
And in their makeup, they are probably quite outgoing as well.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah.
Well, we know fire can burn. Fire can flame and can erupt. So these are things that all the fire signs have in common. They can erupt and get angry and can burn and can kind of create havoc in that way. There is something about confidence. Most fire signs are very confident in themselves. Okay. How about earth signs? When you think of earth, what comes to mind? Okay, Vera's here.
Earth signs, sort of stable, yes, I joined later. So earth signs, it's stable, grounding, slower, nurturing.
Yeah. There's a practicality to earth, a stability to earth, absolutely. They're slower for sure. So that, very good, very good. Okay, so you see, I haven't given you my slides that has all the answers. You're coming up with this yourself because this is not rocket science. This is not all that hard to do. What about air signs? What does air have in common?
I think it's more about thinking, thought, kind of thoughts, people that is more in the sky than in the earth.
Okay. Air has to do with the mind, for sure.
Yeah.
Air is mental. And all air signs are about the mind. It's that simple. Have to do with mentality. Can be too much in the clouds, but it still has to do with the mind. Okay, someone is echoing and I don't know who it is. So if you are not speaking, if you know how to mute yourself, you can mute yourself and then unmute yourself when you want to talk. It'll be easier than me having to mute you and unmute you. So we can go that route. Okay, I see Yvonne here. And Yvonne, I'm going to, no, you have yourself muted, Yvonne. So you need to unmute yourself. There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Well, we were doing air signs, but I just thought air signs was the intelligence, being in the mind, the quick intellect.
That's right.
But I didn't know if you were into water signs or not, but water signs for me is someone who's just the drama queen, the emotions. Everything's so emotional.
Right. Yeah. Now, it doesn't have to be drama. It just means emotions. It means feelings, emotions. Sensitivity that comes along with feelings, right?
Okay.
So that's good, group. So you see, now you've got that under your belt. So here we are, just looking at it, you know, on our slide here. Earth is solid, water is liquid, air is gaseous, and fire is radiant ionized energy. So fire signs have energy, air signs are mind, water signs are feelings or emotions. Earth has to do with solidity and, you know, being stable. Elements are classified into two groups. There is what we call masculine and feminine. The masculine are the fire and air signs, so they're the odd-numbered signs. Active, self-expressive, it's the yang energy. Whereas the feminine are the water and earth signs, the even-numbered signs, passive, receptive, the yin energy. Okay, and any questions on that? I'm not expecting any of you to memorize all of this, but this gives you a pretty good idea as we go through the various signs. So, fire, a lot of you have already said some of this. Fire is excitable, it's enthusiastic, it's confident. Possible lack of self-control, because fire can burn. And when the fire rages, it's out of control. It can be self-centered and impersonal. It can be impatient. Well, fire again, it's all over the place. May rush into things, can come across as willful and insensitivity to others. Now, this is masculine. Air, was air masculine or was it feminine?
Masculine.
Right. Thank you. So we've got the two masculine ones together. Focus energy on ideas that have not yet materialized. Mind, thought, mental. Can be impractical dreamers, the head up in the clouds. They have the ability to detach, thus are often objective and have perspective. Because this isn't clingy, you see. You would have the clingy with water, with feelings. This is the mind. Most social of all the elements, because it's chatty. You chat, you talk from the throat. The throat chakra is where the mind is. Can overvalue intellectual abilities, needs distance and objectivity in order to find itself. So someone who is an air sign might need to, when there's an argument or a sensitive thing, might need their own space, needs distance to find themselves, you know, as opposed to be cuddled right away or to be handled right away. So again, you would appeal to the element of the various signs. Earth relies on senses, so you have all your five senses. And practical reasoning, innate understanding as to how the material world functions. They are slower, like was said. They are patient, self-disciplined, and resourceful. Strength of endurance and persistence. Matter of fact, conventional, cautious, dependable, and stable. So again, this is not your spontaneous responses to life. Can be rigid. You can get stuck in the mud, like fixity, like earth, you know, getting stuck. Can be rigid, adhere to routines and a linear approach to the world. What about water? Water is in touch with feelings, hence sensitivity, in tune with nuances and subtleties. They can be very intuitive. Not all water signs are, depends on the person, obviously. Empathetic response to others, as well as in tune with the deeper dimensions of life. Vulnerable, can be reactive, fearful, seeks closeness and merging. Why do you think water signs can be fearful? Anybody can just speak up. I still have some of you muted, so you might have to raise your hand. But those that are unmuted, unmute yourself and speak up. Why do you think water signs could be fearful? forcing you to think
maybe
that.
Maybe because they be stuck in their emotion?
It has to do with their emotions. So what about their emotions makes them fearful?
Because they cannot control it.
They can't control their own emotions? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if they cannot control their emotions, so can be fearful because they can't try to subjugate some, other people or create a melodrama.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, yes. We can take that idea that has to still do with one's feelings and expand that. See, water, if you're submerged in water, you don't, there's no boundaries. That's what I want to say. There are no boundaries with water. And so emotions fill the air of others, and therefore it can impact, and someone can feel tremendously overwhelmed by other people's emotions coming at them, or emotions that are in the room, and therefore, and even their own emotions, like you say, that cannot be controlled, can lead one to being fearful. Yes. Yes. So that's good. Thank you. Okay. So that takes care of our modes or our crosses. It takes care of our elements. Now, we're going to just start maybe with the very first sign of the zodiac, which is Aries. Now, you look at the glyph. This is the glyph right here. And I don't think it takes a genius to realize that the reason they have this glyph is that it can represent the horns of the ram, right? And this particular one, it shows even more. Also, it can also represent a spring of water erupting. So you have that here. And remember that it's cardinal. Cardinal had to do with beginnings. So it springs forth, right? Isn't it interesting that in Aries, you have spring, at least in this part of the world. Everything springs forth. And it is a fire sign. Which again, combustible, independent. So here are some of the qualities associated with Aries. We also have to remember that Aries is number one. It's the first sign. So just like the first ray, it has a lot to do with being number one. Well, if you remember some of the qualities of first ray, it had to do with independence. It had to do with beginnings. It had to do with pioneering and being assertive. Hence, this takes in impatience, impulsiveness, lacking in moderation, domineering, and quick-tempered. Fire signs can be very quick-tempered. I don't have the rays here because when I have taught astrology in the past to people that don't know the rays, it would just confuse them. But I don't think this is hard to figure out that Aries conveys the first ray. It also conveys the sixth ray and the seventh ray. So you've got three rays there. The Tibetan sometimes only gives us one ray, one ray for a sign. Like we have basically three, we have our personality, our soul, and our monadic ray. Likewise, these signs also should have three. A lot of guesstimate based on knowledge, there's a tendency to give a particular sign other rays than what the Tibetan has given us. And either Michael has done that or other astrologers have done that. Sometimes it's very obvious and sometimes it's not. So we have Aries, fire, cardinal. What is its exoteric ruler? Exoteric being traditional ruler, which you never let go of. You have to know the traditional one, and then you know, and then you have to learn the esoteric one. Its traditional ruler is Mars. Mars. Mars is known as the god of war. And the god of war is aggressive. It's usually the sign for maleness, right? Many times on a washroom door, you see the glyph of Mars. And for a woman, you see the glyph of Venus, Mars and Venus, male and feminine, male and female. Mars, being the god of war, brings to Aries fearlessness. Now remember, Aries was already aggressive. It was already out there with fire. It was already initiating. And then we add Mars to it. I mean, it was tremendous forward movement and combativeness. I don't know who's typing, but whoever is, maybe you should mute yourself, because sometimes this comes out in the computer. We can really hear it. So, and I'll be with you in a minute, Ray. So we have the vitality, and we have stamina, energy, strength, drives, and sex. So, yes, Ray, please go ahead.
While we're on Aries, and particularly Ray 1, we're told that Ray 1 is not at present in manifestation. So therefore, it doesn't actually work through the sign, does it, or does it?
Oh, yes. It's not that Ray 1 isn't in manifestation. There aren't that many Ray 1 souls, although there are. Ray 1 is the true Ray 1, as it is meant to be, has not yet manifested in this solar system, because we have not developed sufficient love, sufficient consciousness or soul. But that doesn't mean that Ray 1 doesn't exist. It does.
Okay. Yeah, fine.
Okay. So, yeah, there are Ray 1 personalities. There are Ray 1 on the mind. There are Ray 1 souls, and so on. So it does exist. But we don't yet really know its true dynamism and its true impact. The destroyer aspect of it is not yet really, really ready to be known because, as I said, we haven't developed sufficient love. Now, it is said many times that Aries can put their foot in their mouth. You know, they're so aggressive and they do things without thinking. And those of you who have attended the labor of Hercules, do you remember what happened with that labor, with Abrides and Hercules, and trying to tame the horses, the mares? What was necessary? What do you think that Aries needs in order to be more soul-like? We know it's aggressive. We know it's forward moving. It's got tremendous energy, strength, drive, and that goes hand in hand with Aries. What do you think it needs? Yes, Yvonne.
I think in that labor, he was so arrogant, he left his friends, and his friend wasn't strong enough. He didn't have the strength, and the mares ate him.
Right. What was he needed
more humility. I think his sin there was pride or arrogance. Or
what did he need to do that he did not?
I forget. Sorry.
That's okay. Annabelle, you can unmute yourself.
Is that he didn't ask for help?
Not quite, no. But okay. That's sorry. Okay. So what he needed to do, and what all Aries people need to do, is to think. This isn't all about brute force. This isn't about just moving forward. You need to stop and think. Okay? So Aries needs to think. So the higher octave of Aries, the higher planet, the esoteric planet, would be what? If he needs to think, what would be the planet that is the thinking planet? This isn't new to everybody. Some of you know the answer.
Jupiter.
I didn't hear the right one. Let's say it again. Which planet is of the mind? Vera, unmute yourself, hon. Hi, Vera.
It would be the sign of Mercury. Mercury.
Exactly.
Mercury.
Exactly right, you see. Aries needs Mercury. Aries needs Mercury. So here you have the Ram, and here you have Mercury, which means that Aries now can, a more developed Aries does not just use his or her vitality, force, forward moving energy. It now can stop and think. And in doing that, it can come up with wonderful ideas. Aries needs to use the mind. And through Mercury, it can be inventive. It can be a leader, an intelligent pioneer in any field. Remember that Aries is a pioneer. It is a leader. It's got first rate to it as well. It can invent. Now, there's some interesting things about Mercury that we could talk a little bit about. Mercury is known as Hermes in Roman times, or is it Greek, it's Greek mythology. Mercury is the Roman name, sorry. It has to do with the mind. And this is the caduceus. The caduceus is a symbol that is often associated with Mercury. Anybody venture thoughts on that? Why? What has this sign to do with Mercury? How about you guys that know a little bit of astrology helping out here? Good, Vera. Thank you.
I know, I'm just shooting from the hip. So would it something to do with building Antakarana, having mind under control and linking the centers so that...
Mercury's a messenger.
Yes, you're right, Vera. That's correct. It has a lot to do with building of the Antakarana. Now remember, the Antakarana starts within our three vehicles. Our three vehicles have to be somewhat integrated and united, and a stream of energy linking it up to the personality. And what this depiction of the caduceus is, it shows the energy moving through the chakras, the center column being the Sushumna, and the ones on either side being the Ida and the Pingala. So you have the energies moving through the chakras, crisscross at the chakras, go around, crisscross again at the next chakra, all the way up to the head, right? And eventually, the kundalini energy, which is at the base of the spine, would rise up through the chakras that have been stimulated and awakened up to the top of the head. Now, that is one way of looking at the caduceus. The other way is that we know that the caduceus, without the wings up there, represents medicine, right? You've seen this on trucks, you know, the EMS and other trucks. Why would this represent medicine?
Eva, Tiago has written a note here. I don't know whether he can't speak or what. He said something about Mercury. Remember me, the medicine sign, and the kundalini with the three nadis.
Okay.
Karen Soper also offered something when you talked about what do the Aries need to use with Mercury. They must do it with love. Use the intention, love and wisdom, and the intention of love. And okay. Rose offered Mercury. I'm just reading these out so good. That they can hear that they've been noticed.
Good. Good. Thank you. Thank you, Kay. So, Annabelle, if you unmute yourself.
Okay. Wouldn't it also show, like, I mean, it looks like such a perfect balance. Everything looks connected and whole, and then with the wings at the top, to me, that speaks of the spiritual overseer. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the sign, the symbol, it just looks so perfected.
And it is.
And balanced with the spirit being on top. Excuse me. Sorry.
That's okay. And it is. And here you have the wing. And if you look down here, you have the wings on the helmet of Hermes. And there are some depictions. Did I have it on the previous one? I don't think so. Where you many times see on Mercury wings on his feet. Because Mercury is known as the messenger of the gods. Now, Mercury can go up to the higher realms, right? It can go up to the spiritual triad and bring down messages from the gods, the spiritual triad, that then is reflected into our minds. Again, you're dealing here with the mind. So he was known way back in Greek mythology as the messenger of the gods. He could go up to all these various heights, get messages from the gods, and bring them down. That was what he was known as. Also, Mercury is known as the healer. He was one that did heal, and hence you did have the caduceus becoming the emblem or the symbol for medicine. And he also was known as a jokester or a prankster. And he used to play a lot of jokes during his time on other people. He used to even Apollo many times could not find him when he did his pranks. So he's very much associated with humor and a sense of humor. So all of that is Mercury. And Mercury, as we know, is a... it's a sacred planet. Mars, as we know, was not a sacred planet. So when we're thinking of Aries, we have to think of, if you have a strong Aries in your chart, how do I mean a strong Aries? Are any of your luminaries in Aries? Do you have your sun, moon, or ascendant in Aries? If you do, you would go to see where, first of all, Mars is. Where is Mars? In what sign? And then, of course, in what house? And you would see if there are other aspects coming to it. Now, I know we haven't talked aspects, but you would see its relationship to everything else. So you would have to have a sense of what your Mars is doing in your chart. And then you would look at the esoteric planet, Mercury, and to see what Mercury is doing in your chart. And that's how you would play with your Aries being one of the luminaries and the two planets, the exoteric and the esoteric planet. So the esoteric planet is always a spiraling up of, okay? It's a spiraling up of the exoteric. Any questions and comments? Because we're not going to move on to Taurus. I think we're going to leave it at Aries. It's the first sign of the zodiac, so you have the initial impact of how we're going to move through these signs and give you a good feel for the astrology. But I'm opening up this to any questions before we actually have to go. Yes, Vera. Hi, Vera.
Through what planet is channeled the ray 7? You said that Aries is number 1, 6, and 7. So how comes through Aries the ray 7?
Because it is. We're told that the seventh ray comes through in Aries. Aries are inventors. They can invent, and in order to invent, you're working with form, usually, and there is that seventh ray ability. It doesn't mean that we have to have a ruling planet that's a seventh ray planet for Aries. Just like Aries does not convey the fourth ray, yet Mercury does. Aries conveys 1, 6, and 7, and Mars conveys the sixth ray. So in that respect, yes, they go hand in hand. And many times it's very hard to separate Aries and Mars because they are so alike in many ways. Mercury, on the other hand, is a fourth-rate planet. It's the antikorana, it's the bridge, you know, it's the mind. And if you meet people that are Aries, that are fairly evolved, it's amazing how inventive they are and what great ideas they have that they can offer. You know, they can come up with wonderful, wonderful ideas. Look at Michael, okay? Michael, our Michael, is an Aries sun. He's constantly coming up with new ways for us to integrate more in the school. Always new ideas, new pioneering ideas that he has. Highly intelligent. So he uses Mercury very well with his Aries sun. Okay? Yes, Tiago, you need to unmute yourself. Right, go ahead.
Okay, but, coming back, trying to remember the quotes in the middle of the meeting, how do you know in which quotes you are? Is it all about the sun you have? Fixed threats, the cardinal threats, or and so forth. It's all about the sun, because in the beginning you told me that you have grandson that is working in the moon, with the moon, and the mind. So then we can move to the sun, but when we are talking about the crux you are now is related to your sign. Like myself, I am Aquarian, so I am the fixed crux.
You are what? I'm sorry, I missed that word.
I have a sun in Aquarius, so
right.
Maybe I am in the fixed cross, but I have a rising sun in Aries. So how do I know in which cross I am working on?
Well,
working with.
Peter, you answered that earlier when you told our group that you're going to cover the crosses in terms of the evolutionary aspects.
Right. It's a whole different subject, and I have a wonderful, wonderful program or a wonderful seminar on that. I've offered that many times because it can be very confusing. The Tibetan doesn't clarify it for us, that one way of looking at the crosses has to do with evolution, and that is not what we're dealing with right now. Put all of that aside. All we're looking at is the mode of these crosses. So Aries is cardinal, and all you need to do is to consider those words that we had associated with cardinal. Do not think in terms of evolution and where you are on the path, because that is not what we are looking at when we refer to these crosses. Okay? I know how confusing this is. It's always confusing. It will get clearer. So as an ascendant, as an Aries ascendant, you would think of cardinal as being forward-moving, pioneering, assertive, active. That's what you have to look at as cardinal. And then you would look at fire. Aries is fire. So you put the two together, cardinal, fire. And then, of course, you would look to see what is the keynote for Aries. Do you all have all the keynotes? Has that been put on the Moria Federation campus for all of you to look at that? Is that a yes or a no?
Okay, I'm trying to understand. No, not yet.
I come forth and from the plane of mind, I come forth and from the plane of mind,
I rule.
That's the Aries keynote. I come forth and from the plane of mind, I rule. What does that mean to you? You see, you need to spend time really contemplating, thinking about it, because if that is your ascendant, if you have your true time and that is your true ascendant, though, that keynote is very important for you to truly understand, and how you then need to incorporate that into your life. You know, the first thing I say is that you need to use your mind. Now, you're fortunate that you have Aquarius Sun, which automatically gives you the ability to use the mind because it's an air sign. So in that way, you are helped. You follow me?
Yeah. Yeah, I follow you. Thank you. I was reading the slides, and this came to my mind. So, okay, I wish you can give me a presentation about this theme in the future.
We will get to it. We need to get through all the signs and their ruling planets first. We're only on number one. I don't know how many we're going to get done next time. It all depends on how interactive we are with one another. And once we go through all 12, then I will go into the evolutionary way that we move through the crosses. Okay?
Okay.
Eva, may
Thank
I
you, Eva.
Thank you.
This is Joe. May I offer just a suggestion regarding the question about Ray 7 coming through Aries? I believe if students want to look at the tabulations that are provided in esoteric astrology, if you study those, you will find, and DK provides, the rays that come through each of the signs, and often it's related to the planets that rule. So it's a study, and I would advise, if you're interested in it, that you really look at those tabulations, and they are in esoteric astrology for the most part.
Okay. I know that I have all kinds of tabulations somewhere in my computer. I could easily post them, but I don't know whether it's a little too soon to do that. But I think it is.
I think it's something that it evolves as you go through each sign. So
right.
It was just in relation to that question about Aries and Ray 7.
Right. Okay, thank you, Joe. So any other questions before we say goodbye?
Eva, this is VL. The tabulation on page 86 in Esoteric Astrology, it lists the seven rays, then the three constellations which transmit through it, and then it also gives the orthodox and esoteric rulers. So if anybody's going to look for a tabulation, that's a good one because it has all of the components combined.
Okay, repeat the page again.
Page 86 of Esoteric Astrology.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Bio. Okay, so you all have that. This is our source, you know. We can do a lot of guesstimates, but we always have to go back to the source being the Tibetan. Okay, everybody, I very much appreciate your attendance. This is recorded, so you'll have it for safekeeping. I hope I haven't screwed up with the recording or any of that, because this is still all very new to me or for me. But it'll come to you shortly. Thank you again. Thank you for your valuable questions, and we'll continue another time. So,
Eva, can I make a short announcement, please?
Please do.
There is another webinar tomorrow that Michael's giving on. It's a general student webinar, and it's on any question people might like to ask about the Ageless Wisdom, and Michael will be fielding those questions himself. I'm sending out the invitation within the next 5 minutes to everybody.
Right. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, so if any of you have...
There's a question here from somebody.
Burning questions, think about that, and you can join Michael tomorrow. I cannot be with you.
Karen Soper says, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Karen. All of you, thank you very much. You know, this is a new experience for all of us, these webinars. It's not something I have. I'm going to just see what I'm saying here, just a minute. There we go. I've not. It's just new. We're all experimenting with this. You know, I've always taught with people in front of me, and therefore I can see their faces, I can read their eyes, there's interaction, it's much more interactive. This is new in the sense that I'm just talking to a screen, and so I appreciate all of you with your inputs and your questions. And I think we're going to get this on how to handle these the muting and then unmuting and all that. See, if I unmute everybody, then we have a cacophony of sounds. The computers start making sounds. You can hear echoes. You can hear sometimes technological, you know, sounds that the computers make. So I know we do that with a small group, but with a large group, it's a little difficult. So I think in the future, what we might want to do is unmute all of you, and then you'll mute yourself and unmute yourself as you want to speak. And this way you can make noise in your own home and no one hears it. So that might be the next step. We'll try that. But thank you all. Thank you for your presence and your good involvement. I hope this will
help.
Thank
you, Eva.
Thank you, Eva.
Vera, thank got you, your Eva. Hand up?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's all say om together, and that'll be the end.
Okay.
Om.
Om.